The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Everybody, John and Lance, along with Del Rahil, joins us at 9 right here on ESPN 97.5. Let's break down what went on this weekend in the NFL Draft. Our NFL Draft expert, guy who was on TV all weekend long talking about it on the NFL Network, Lance Zierlein. What's up?
What's going on? How you doing?
You tired?
It's about like every draft year. It's the same thing, only this year there's no vacation afterwards. There's no, boy, after working 7 days a week for 4 months, now I'm going to just take some time off. It's like, there's a thing going on right now.
There's a thing going on.
Plus, I have to write 10 more players over the next 3 days. I've got 3 articles to write, and I've got to do TV today. So it's not over yet for me.
You got to write 10 players, because 10 guys were drafted that you didn't write up?
Yeah, I wrote 510 of them. I did not have on my list. 2 of them I were told I didn't need to write by a team when I had this list of players I'm trying to figure out. And then the rest of them, just probably would have popped up if there were pro days. And I would have seen them work out and have big pro days, and they would have hit my board, or if I would have, if it would have been a regular process. But that's okay. So I got to write 10 more players. They're not getting the same treatment as, they're getting 30 minutes max, and that's it. But that's still going to take up 5 hours of my time. And then I got to do an article today on my three favorite picks of every round. The Houston Texans hit the board with Isaiah Coulter when they drafted him.
You liked him in the fifth?
Yeah, I like him. I think he's got upside. I think he's got the potential to be a cheap Will Fuller replacement if something happens. So, yeah, that's the kind of receiver. He's opposite of – he's not going to be a Randall Cobb or a Brandon Brooks type. He's going to be an outside receiver with upside. He's got some ability. So, I liked him. I think they got him about where they should. To me, he has fourth-round talent, developmental. Fourth rounds are typically – designed for, a lot of times the developmental guys are going to be there. That's not the case with the Texans, the fourth round picks. We'll get to that in a second. But the fourth round is where you can get guys who can become starters who are kind of raw or for smaller schools or stuff like that. So that he fits into that category. He went in the fifth round. He was expected to go in the fifth or sixth round, so he went where he was expected to go. And I shared a draft board with the general public yesterday. It is on Google Docs. What I did was I combined my defensive and offensive boards, and it was from conversations with a variety of teams. Now, if the Texans didn't, dislike me, I would have been more than happy to share it with them. I would have shared it with them anyway. Even if they disliked me, I would have been more than happy to share it with them had they asked, because I helped a little bit last year, and I'd be more than happy to this year. I want him to do well. I don't think the head coach / general manager has been very good as a general manager in terms of his general knowledge of how to operate as a GM. But I want them to be able to do well. And so I shared this, and it was an idea of where guys would be drafted based. The starting point was my concept of where guys would be drafted based on my grade. But really, it's when you've done this for a while, you start to figure out there's certain types of players going certain types of rounds. So you get a general feel for it. And then I fine-tuned it with talking to these different teams. As far as the Texans were concerned, Blacklock had a first or second round grade, late first, early second. That's where he went. I thought for them to get him at 40 was a really good pick. I was very happy that they got Ross Blacklock. Ross Blacklock from TCU is a disruptive, penetrating defensive tackle. He is a guy who's got this really fast, wide lateral step where he can get into the gaps and cause a lot of problems. Like, he's just very, very quick for offensive linemen. And you can see it in a running game. You can also see it as a pass rusher. Now, they gave him a lot of leeway at TCU, a lot of leeway, meaning, he was able to kind of freestyle along defensive and offensive line to get into the gaps he wanted to. When the ball came downhill at him, when he had to take on blocks, he's not as strong. That's not his strong suit, is not holding up at the point of attack. I don't think that's what he does well. But to me, John, I thought the Texans really needed defensive line help. That's one of the areas they needed. And with Blacklock, I personally thought they got the best available there for that spot.
That was the number one thing that they needed.
Yeah.
They got a position of need.
Yep.
And they got a guy that was, a good player at a position of need. So that was a really good that's who I put him or Epinesa was who I predicted that they would take, because that was such a need position for them. What about Grenard? I mean, I did want an outside. I wanted an edge guy, too.
I'll be honest with you. Grenard is just kind of, for me. He's okay. It's where he was supposed to go was in the third, fourth. It depended on the team you talked to. I kind of thought he'd get pushed into the earlier portion of the third because I thought there would be a run on edge, but then there wasn't. Because Zach Bond was, he fell into the third round. And so those guys got pushed backwards. But Grenard, to me, my personal grade on him was more like a late third, mid-third to late third. I'm okay with him. The problem was he really didn't have a very good combine. He ran a 4.87. His explosion numbers weren't great, which is something you want to see from an edge rusher. They were a little bit low. His strength numbers were just very, very average. He's got high football character. He works hard. He came from Louisville. He played at Louisville his last season at Louisville. He shattered his wrist early in the season against a top-ranked opponent. I'm trying to recall the opponent he took on. Might have been Clemson, actually. And he shattered his wrist and had to and was gone for the rest of the year. And then he was a graduate transferred to Florida, and played well at Florida last year. He's just not – I don't know, John, that he's any better that he's going to – I feel like Jacob Martin is going to be the backup to Whitney Mercilus because he's got that edge speed. Jonathan Greenard is not a – he's not an edge speed guy. He's more of a Sam on the other side.
Right. Grenard's playing the Sam. That's what Bill O'Brien said.
Mm-hmm.
So he's more – you know what? Maybe you're going to get more pass rush out of him than you are of Brendan Scarlett.
Maybe. Scarlett just has to stay healthy. See, I also think Duke Ejiofor is the guy to keep your eye on, too. Yeah. I think Duke's got some talent as a rusher. Yeah. So I'm not sure that Greenard is a lot better than any of those guys. He's okay. For me, that's just kind of a C, you know. And when I say C, I mean C means average. B means above average. A means excellent. D means below average. So I would give him like a C+ is what he would be. Then when we go to the fourth round, now this is where I have a little bit of a problem with the Texans draft. I don't have a problem with the players. It's just you just got fill-ins on the roster. And so Charlie Heck, who's an offensive tackle from North Carolina, the Texans get him in the fourth round. I'm going to nitpick it just for a little bit in that I thought where Charlie Heck was drafted, the Texans should have drafted Terrell Burgess out of Utah. I think Terrell Burgess would have been one of the steals of the draft in the fourth round. He can play safety. He can play cornerback. He is super talented. I made a comment about him on Twitter, and I'll just say a coach in the NFL sent me a direct message saying, I really like your evaluation of Terrell Burgess. And I didn't know if he meant what I had just said or if he had read the scouting report. But basically what I said was, I think he's athletic enough to be a slot corner, to play some slot corner. He's really smart. He has really high character from a football standpoint, works his tail off. He is extremely instinctive. And I thought the Texans could have got him there, which would have given them a corner safety, because I had heard that they were kind of looking safety, but then they signed yet another safety before the draft. So now they've got like eight safeties. And probably Gibson, I've heard, is going to be gone. That's what one of the teams told me. So, and they just signed him. But what you have now is you draft
Aaron Colvin. Another Aaron Colvin.
Yeah, probably so. What you draft now is Charlie Heck, And Heck is a fine football player, more of a fifth round type, but he is just a swing tackle, meaning he's really only to be a backup left tackle, backup right tackle. Now, John, after Titus Howard's injury, you can understand why the Texans want to get better than Roderick Johnson, who I never thought was a player. Roderick Johnson, that ain't good enough. So what the Texans did was they got a better version of a backup for Titus Howard and Laremy Tunsil, which is fine. They needed that. I just felt like there were players who could have helped you, who could have had a higher impact where you drafted. I thought Charlie Heck could have been maybe the back end of the fourth. You're the second pick in the fourth. Maybe you could have waited for that. And that's maybe nitpicking a little bit, but when you have a player like Terrell Burgess on the board that could have been
where
a starter.
Where did he end up going?
Heck is just kind of, to me, he's one that I would have waited on a little bit.
No, where did Terrell Burgess end up going?
Rams.
Yeah. He's with the Rams. You'll see him starting by 2021 is my prediction on that one. Good football player. Anyway, so you got a guy that you needed. I think you needed a swing tackle. I just would have waited. If I could get a player of Terrell Burgess's stock, I would have done that. And there's some other players I might have looked at as well. So then in the second, now the next pick is a guy that had a great combine, where Jonathan Greenard was kind of, really, frankly, not a height, weight, speed. He has these long arms, but he really wasn't an explosive combine tester at all. As a matter of fact, he was below average in a lot of the measurements. John Reed from Penn State was very good in all those measurements. He's a sticky man cover corner. He's twitchy. He's got some good coverage stuff. The thing is, as the play rolls on and you force him to stay in coverage, it's kind of like he gets behind a little bit. That's nitpicking a little bit. I think this is a good player for the Texans to add. The fourth was definitely high. I didn't talk to teams who thought he'd be any higher than late fifth, early sixth. So, but I didn't talk to every team, so I don't know. Maybe he would have gone higher. I thought the Texans probably reached up a little higher for John Reed. And you heard what Bill O'Brien said. He had and this happens a lot, not just Bill O'Brien. Anytime a college coach, this happened with Butch Davis, when my dad was with Butch Davis. They drafted Gerard Warren, a.k.a. Big Money, ahead of Richard Seymour, because he knew Gerard Warren from football camps whenever he used to come to University of Miami when he was recruiting him. Of course, Gerard Warren ended up going to Florida. They passed on Richard Seymour, an all-pro, the Cleveland Browns did, Butch Davis, because he remembers Gerard Warren at his football camps. Well, that's one of the reasons why Cleveland has been a disaster since they came back. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but Bill O'Brien did reference the fact that John Reed used to go to the Penn State football camp. So he had he knew John Reed, obviously, from way back when he was 16 years old. But he's only a slot corner. I know Bill O'Brien made the comment that they think he could play inside, outside. I have serious doubts about that. So I think he's just going to end up being a slot corner. But, backup slot, that's fine. Maybe he can become a starting slot corner for you, a starting nickel in the future. Isaiah Coulter, the next guy. Isaiah Coulter, John, I was a big fan of Isaiah Coulter's in the fifth round, as I told you. I think Isaiah Coulter, for me, has developmental. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that I think he's going to be a starter in the league for sure, but I do think he has wide receiver 3 potential, and he's got wide receiver 2 traits. He is 6'2", almost 200 pounds. He ran a 4.45 40, 36-inch vertical leap, 10-foot broad jump. His short area numbers in terms of his change of direction was not great, but this is what I wrote about him. Raw but talented X receiver with NFL caliber length, speed, and athletic ability. He runs a limited route tree and doesn't show attention to detail on his route, but he's loose and fluid with the ability to get that area corrected. He lets coverage off the hook when he doesn't burst and separate like he's capable of, but he has access to plenty of juice when needed. While improvement should be expected, learning to play with better catch aggression and ball tracking is not a given. Coulter is an explosive high upside talent with functional starter upside, but a lower floor. So, which is, he had 9 catches for 152 yards against Virginia Tech. he's the kind of guy to me that that's the kind of fifth round pick you take. Like this is a this is what you take in the fifth, a guy with this kind of upside. So I like that. I like that in the fifth round. And all then right. that's it. That was all the last of the Texans picks because I did not see. Now, I was out and about in day three because day one and day two had been a big grind, and then I had to do TV stuff every single day. So I don't. Can you guys tell me what happened to their seventh-round picks? I just heard that the Texans dealt their seventh-round picks. What did their seventh-round picks go for?
I lost connection here.
They traded one of them for a future pick. I believe I saw that, so okay. that's why one of the
for six next year, right?
Yeah, so that's why at least one of them was gone. I don't.
Yeah, they traded it to New England, I believe.
Hey, I'm gonna do something.
Listen, we'll get it on the other side. 7:15 ESPN 97.5 7-3-7-8-0-3-7-7-6. If you got comments about that, we'll talk to Lance about all the other picks as well. We had a different kind of weekend here at the Granado, so we can talk about that as well. 7-3-7-8-0-3-7-7-6 if you want to get in. I got to talk right here about Chastain Ford. That's my peeps over there. That's I just love what Patrick and Joe do. And I joined the Chastain family about 6 months ago, and I got to tell you, I just love it. I'll get an email from them every once in a while. Hey, come on in, and we'll service your vehicle. You're probably getting close to the oil. You're getting close to all those stuff that it's not high pressure. It's just, hey, don't forget about this, or do you know what? Come on in. You want to get so whatever it is that you want to get done, and you can do a virtual walk around of the facility. You can request a home test drive. You can buy from home with Chastain at home. The facility is clean, safe, designated areas to keep customer and employee at a safe distance if they want to come into the store to shop or take delivery, whatever the case may be. They will pick up your vehicle. They'll service it. They will sanitize it, and they will bring it back to you. They will give you 84 months, up to 6 months with no payments, 84 months of 0% financing. Are you kidding me? This is just ridiculous. So if you're looking for that wonderful Ford vehicle, if you got to get out of your car and get into another one, well, you've got Chastain Ford here for you. They're going to get you into those payments that you need. It's on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown. You're looking for the best Ford dealership in this city. It's Chastain Ford.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
We felt like he would be there at 40. We felt like if he wasn't there at 40, we felt there was a good chance he would be drafted in the first round. And when we went to bed last night, we were happy, because this is a guy that, like you said, he came in to visit with us, had a really – one of the things that we did with him on the visit is he was in front of the whole coaching staff, and that's hard. There's 20 coaches around the room, and he's in the middle there, and he answered all the questions and did a great job. Very impressive guy. He worked out a little bit. Just a real impressive guy. So we were thrilled to be able to draft him when we did there at 40.
All right, welcome back. ESPN 97.5, that's Bill O'Brien talking about getting Ross Blacklock. They traded the 240th pick to the Saints. They had three seventh-rounders. They traded them all away. Traded all three of their seventh-rounders away.
For a sixth?
And they got one. No, they got the 240th, the seventh-round pick they traded to the Saints. I can't click on. Del, do you have the details of the other trades?
No, not in front of me. I haven't found it.
No, I can't. It's not pulling up. The last one was to the Saints, though, the 240th pick. They just said, screw it, we'll get a sixth-rounder next year. And you know what? That kind of makes sense. Here's the deal is, Bill O'Brien has said this over and over again, is that this is not a year for rookies, and especially seventh-round developmental guys, they'd all have to take redshirt years. You'd have to pay them whatever. Coulter's a guy, like you mentioned, and Charlie Heck is a swing guy. He's not going to be on the field right away. Coulter, we'll see. He's got a lot of upside. We'll see if he's on the field right away, but he might be able to make an impression. Wide receiver, we'll find out how fast he can learn. Blacklock, I love the defensive lineman, and in this position because you can get on the field in situations. You do a lot of substituting on the defensive line, and you can put him in situations that you feel him comfortable. And defensive line especially, hey, go take up two gaps or go rush the passer or whatever it is the case with, that you're going to do with him. Receivers are harder to develop in the NFL, obviously, because there's a lot of nuance and whatnot going on. But, you know, having seventh rounders on your roster right now when you don't have any OTAs, you don't know how long training camp is going to be, you don't know how much hands-on time you can get with them. I could see. Say, you know what, instead of taking a seventh rounder this year, let's get a sixth rounder next year where we can get our hands on them all offseason.
Well, they use the other two seventh rounders to trade up along with the fourth rounder to get Charlie Heck. Now, that fourth rounder was acquired through a trade that they got when the Dolphins traded up with them. So it was an extra fourth rounder.
Yeah, I don't think that was needed. Honestly, I don't think that was needed. Based on what the board looked like, I don't think they had to do that. They had 2 fourths, right? So they just moved up?
Yeah, they acquired an extra fourth from the Dolphins who traded up. So they used that fourth plus two seventh rounders to trade up and get Heck.
To trade up further in the fourth.
Yes, to get Heck.
Yeah, I don't think that was really necessary. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I do like anytime you can move a pick for a next year higher pick, you do it. I'll give you an example. How about this, John? This is what Ballard has done in the last 3 years. In the last 3 years through trading back, because they trade back all the time. They've had a 2000. This is just 3 first-round picks. 2018, 2019, 2020. Those are 3 picks, right? 3 first-round picks. Here is what he has parlayed 3 first-round picks into. Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, Kamoko Touré, Jordan Wilkins, Rakia Sin, Ben Banigou, Marvell Tell, DeForest Buckner, and Michael Pittman Jr. He has moved back and picked up additional draft picks and turned. Quentin Nelson was 1 pick by himself. DeForest Buckner was 1 pick by himself. It's that 2019 draft where he moved picks so much, so often, that he was able to multiply them into, right now there's 3 starters and probably will be 4 starters with Michael Pittman. That's how you maneuver. That's just a simple example of why teams trade back. Teams who trade back all the time, like John Schneider, who knows what he's doing with the Seattle Seahawks, it's because I know in the short term, you got the disappointment of like, oh, we don't get a pick in the first round. This sucks. But in the short term, that's how you feel. In the long term, you get multiple players that can turn into multiple starters, that can turn into multiple very good players. And so that's just one example of how 3 draft picks, 3 first-round picks, became what could be a minimum of 4 starters, but I think very likely is going to end up being 5 to 6 starters because Rocky Sin's going to start. Quentin Nelson is an all-pro. DeForest Buckner is an all-pro. Of course, they traded their first-rounder for him and made him sign a contract. When they traded for him, they had a contract already done. That's how you're supposed to do it. The Texans got stuck, bent over and stuck, and paid $4 million extra, $4 million higher than the league's highest paid tackle. Never in history have I ever seen this. Never in the history of football have I seen somebody pay this much more than the highest paid player. But this is what happens when you've given away draft picks and you have no leverage. They're going to stick it in you. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Laramie Tunsil and his agent stuck it in the Texans.
$20 million was not the number. I mean, $20 million was not going to be the number. It's just $22 million. It really is. It's so. And this is going to be. And by the way, there's a chance. Okay, so you gave up 2 first-rounders. You had them last year. You got a 3-year extension here. There's a chance that he's gone after this, and that's what 2 first-rounders are going to represent. Because are you going to continue?
You won't be able to afford him.
No. Are you going to continue to pay him at that rate? Or are you going to have to go up? Yeah, you're going to have to go up. Or you're just going to have to let him go and hope you get a
Teams are so pissed off of the Texans, John. They are so pissed off of the Texans about this because their incompetence for getting a deal done. Because this is what artificially inflates the market And now the Texans are over here paying $4 million more than they would have had to. They could have made him the highest paid player at $18.5 million at tackle when he was traded. That they could have done that.
Well, Bill O'Brien was asked about that, and he responded with, well, when you want to negotiate an extension, the other team has to allow you to do that. And so apparently, according to him, the Dolphins didn't allow
that.
Watch
this. John, do you think this is true?
Nope. Not a word. I don't believe a word that dude says. When he was asked about, well, you know, him being pissed off during the draft, it was a Zoom thing. When he was asked about DeAndre Hopkins, it was money, and then it wasn't money. You know, when he's asked about anything, dude just flat
he's turned out to a liar.
Lies.
He's turned into a huge liar. DeAndre, you're right. Hopkins turned into money, 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 and then you know what? Over time, he goes, you know what? I'm going to tell the truth. Nah, I want money. We thought we made our team better. And why'd you start off with saying it was a money thing the first time? I just did, but you. You suck too, okay? And then, oh, me and Jack Easterby were just, like, I was joking with Jack and having fun. And so when I got super mad, that must have been sent to me by 100,000 people. Everyone saw it. And then, you know, Bill O'Brien's explanation
The Broncos fan in the stands.
Yeah,
that, you
that was
too,
a Broncos
buddy.
Fan.
He lies about everything.
God,
he lies,
man,
about
you're right.
Everything.
He is a monster liar.
I mean, it's just one thing. I don't believe. And oh, by the way, we'll find out from the Dolphins. We'll find out. Hey, did you guys say that he couldn't come? Why would the Dolphins say they couldn't?
It's
they
not
couldn't
the Dolphins' decision.
Deal?
You call the. You talk to the agent behind the scenes. That's
why
all you got to do is you talk to the agent. They had they were represented by the same agency at the time, John. That's not, none of that's true. Don't listen to
true.
Any of this stuff.
None of that's true.
You're right. This has become serial lying. Yo, well, me and Jack Easterby, where I was talking to him like it was a joke. And no, what? No, you were clearly mad about something. And then John McClain says he was pissed off because the Lions screwed him over on a pick that they had an agreement and then they backed out of the agreement. John McClain said that's what that was.
Yeah, I don't know that was it either. I think that might have been the case that he didn't come to a deal. It looked like there was something wrong with the Zoom feed or something. And he was just he looked at the computer and he was like pissed off at the and he gets up and he's disgusted probably with his IT guy pissed and just yelling at his IT guy and then he walks away. What I love was his kid just sitting there like just another day at the office. Dad's exploding again.
I know.
Look at dad just going off again. Oh well.
Oh, by the way, to the Tunsil thing. Tunsil's like, I got these guys in such a great position. I'm not even going to use an agent. He negotiated the deal himself.
Yeah, he fired his agency. You know what really sucks is I think he got to a point where he fired his agent just because he knew he didn't, like, I already know what the number is. I'm not giving him 1%, 2%, 3%. I'm not giving him any of it.
Mm-mm. So you got a chance to get out of this thing after the 2022 season. You've got him signed through 2023, but you got a chance if he's not any, or whatever the case may be, that you can get out and only lose 3.25 on your cap, dead cap money. So there's an out after 2022. If they're out of this deal, even in 4 years, if you're out of this deal, you spent two first-rounders on one player for 5 years as opposed to how many years you could have gotten out of first-rounders. Now, again, he's your left tackle, awfully important, but two first-rounders and a second round next year. Again, next year we're going to be in the same position. Now we got to talk about, okay, this draft and the people that watched it. We'll do that on the other side. It's 7:31, ESPN 97.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
So, Lance, anybody watch the draft this weekend?
37% jump. This is why the NFL's king, folks. 15.6 million in day one. Now, the numbers have been skyrocketing over the last 3 years. Actually, since 2015, the numbers have been gaining major steam on broadcast and digital. I did not expect this kind of jump, and it wasn't just day one. It was day one, day two, and day three that people tuned in. Did you hear how much the NFL raised?
No.
How much do you think the NFL raised for their draft-a-thon?
It said it raised over $100 million so far.
$100 million.
I want to know, we were talking about that. Like, what does that mean? Where is it going?
I'm sure you
what
can find
COVID
out.
What does COVID relief mean, by the way? What does COVID relief mean? Who are you help? What? It's not like it's...
Quick question in my league. Vic, you have a guy who is a huckster who stole money from people, basically, in your league. He owes a good man like Oliver Luck a bunch of millions of dollars. Stop questioning my commissioner in my league, sir.
By the way,
we are helping millions of people. Do you know that a million people can get $1 million? Basically, I think that's the math. 100 million.
Oh, no, it's not.
When did that happen? Remember, who was it that said that?
We heard about AOC, Mike Bloomberg.
Was it AOC? It sounds like something.
It wasn't her. It was some random person on MSNBC or CNBC.
Yeah, it was somebody on TV.
But somebody who should know better.
They were talking about Mike Bloomberg and the money he had.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That he had spent for his advertising. Yeah.
Oh, so what does COVID relief mean, Lance? What does that mean? And oh, by the way, what did you guys think of the XFL Super Bowl yesterday?
No one saw it.
How about, okay.
Hope somebody got paid for it.
Would yesterday's game have made it even worse for Bill O'Brien here if the Roughnecks had won it, which they were going to do?
I think that's a separate deal.
40,000 people there.
But I don't think it has any impact on what people think of Bill O'Brien. People already have, you know what I mean?
I know they already have their preconceived notions.
Yeah.
But it didn't help him at all that we had a good, you know, a fun football team to watch. I mean, it was Bill O'Brien was their number. He was their PR department. Every time he pissed everybody off, they were like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to watch the Roughnecks. You know what? He's an a-hole. I'm going to watch the Roughnecks. So, you know, just more incidents with him. Anyway, so it was a fun championship game yesterday. And stop talking about our supreme leader, Vince, okay? Because Vince
is he
coming
dead like
up.
That other supreme leader?
He's a lot like all the supreme leaders.
No, but is he dead like apparently the supreme leader of North Korea is?
How come they're trying to keep that under wraps?
Dead, not dead, brain dead, not brain dead.
Well, apparently, isn't his sister taking over and she's like nice or something, so nobody wants him to know?
Yeah, because she's a little bit more pliable.
I don't think she kills people at a rate like he does.
Well, who does?
Yeah, right.
In the current world, who does kill people like that? Let's calm down on the ratings because, you know, if I'm going to be a basketball guy, well, you know why the ratings jump, Lance? Because there are no NBA playoffs. And you know what the draft goes against every year? The NBA playoff. Not that the draft doesn't
NBA
win.
Playoff.
The draft would have won anyway, but that's why the ratings jumped, Lance.
Yeah, right.
No
we
NBA
can always
playoffs.
See the NBA ratings playoffs against the draft always beats the ratings.
I just said it did, but the ratings had a dramatic increase because there's literally
I'll be honest with you. I did not expect this. I didn't expect this. These kind of numbers for the draft. I really didn't.
We know. We talked about it on the air, and you were like, no, it's not going to
be I did not expect this kind of jump. I thought there could be a small one, but I thought people who watch draft. See, here's the thing.
I
actually think virtual draft was a massive hit. Virtual draft and NFL teams now. You hear Sean Payton, he's like, yeah, we got it right. This is I want to do this. Players they didn't care about being there, not the players doing the stuff across the NFL teams thought this was awesome.
Well, you know why? It's because we're deifying. We're making superstars and their suits and all of the stuff, and they haven't played, they haven't pissed a drop in the NFL, and here they are, all these, they're heroic and they're up there and they're with the, I mean, this is the perfect way. Hey kid, you got to earn your way before you become a superstar in the NFL, before the NFL makes you a star. Of course, you know, it's good.
Well, you are a star. You have the star money. Obviously, look, this is the ability to get in front of 500,000 people in Nashville or Las Vegas or wherever. that's a really big deal. So that's well, I say it's not going away. It's going to go away unless they find some type of vaccine. It will go away to have those large groups. But I just think that when you look at the draft itself, the way that it went down, I don't know about you guys' thoughts, but I thought Roger Goodell came away much more humanized. It was kind of There was the funny stuff with the M&Ms, and when he was kicking back on the chair, like people were talking about, is Roger hitting the rocket fuel? Like people, I had a text string of my offensive line guys who just, they were positive Roger was cooked, that he was just, you know, firing down bourbons off the shot.
That's a possibility. Him in front of the trying to get people, he's such a cornball.
Here's the hater.
No, here comes the hater. He really is. No, he's such a...
I really thought it was self-deprecating, and I like the fact that it was the whole draft process, the show, because it had its glitches. It's going to when you're all on remote, but it should. It shouldn't be perfect. It shouldn't be tight. It shouldn't... That's not the time we're living in right now. I thought the draft show was a reflection of really the time that we're in, which was imperfect. You do the best you can. And yet it still came through really well, I thought, for the most part.
I love you, Roger. You did so good, Roger. I love you.
No, I did. I mean, I swear on Jesus right now. I thought the NFL network really couldn't do a whole lot. But ESPN, NFL, the ability to get all those videos coordinated in one place. Obviously, Lewis Riddick had a delay. You're going to have some things like that. One guy is going to have a delay on every broadcast, it seems like. But I found out how difficult it can be to upload, to get all these video conferences together, because I'm doing it with NFL Network, and it's not easy. It's not easy. And I thought they did a really nice job, and I thought I really enjoyed the draft because it was more humanized. It was much more humanized. There's guys just in their house hanging out. Like, you didn't think that? You didn't like it? I thought you did. I told you.
Yeah. I said, this is... The whole star thing and the red carpet, I can't stand a red carpet.
But John,
carpet
when anyway. Did it start?
I can't stand a red carpet anyway, because let's just look at us and glorify us. I just
Wendy would vomit thing. If she heard you saying this stuff.
No. Well, she likes the red carpet of the Oscars, but she, you know, there's a star. You know what I can't stand about the it's let's give ourselves another award. That's what the Oscars, that's what the Emmys, that's what the, let's just look, everybody look at us because we're stuff. Just keep on looking at us and look at our beautiful dresses and stop. Okay?
Well, you're coming from a place
just
where you don't care about that
which
stuff.
Is the best movie.
But
Parasite,
people love that stuff.
Parasite
yeah, but
wasn't
John,
the best
John,
movie.
Del's
I'm
right.
Sorry.
I don't particularly
it's not,
care.
It's not for
it's not for you. People love that. That's
it's not
why,
for you,
that's
John.
Why those shows have those pre-Oscar shows, because people love that stuff.
Yeah.
We're speaking from a point where we don't care. I don't care about it either. I never watched that
it's
stuff.
It's not for
but
us.
But people love that stuff. That's why they do it.
Yeah. It's not for us. And you know, John, people to be fair, I remember 1980s basketball, the Karl Malone draft, Hakeem Olajuwon in his tuxedo. This has been going on. This is not – people like to act like it just started – this has been going on for decades.
No, I didn't say it just started. I can't stand it. But that's me. Okay, I don't like it. I want to know. Okay, did you see people like this? You pick a guy. Oh my God, I like that football player. Great pick. That was wonderful. Look who we got on our team. Awesome. Not look at and showy and all that. All the crap that goes along with it. Okay, I'm sorry. I don't like the Super Bowl pre-game. 9 hours of just not and a red carpet and all of this crap that goes along with it. I want to watch the game.
John,
that's me.
You're in a high rise now. There's nobody on your lawn. You don't have a lawn.
No, see, that's my lawn. That's my get off my
and
lawn.
You know,
I don't like all of the crap that goes along with all of our big events.
You know, there's so many options because I know what time the game starts. So you know what I would choose to do? Not watch it. And then when the game starts, I'll tune in. And I wouldn't be bothered by it. That's what I've never understood. Like, people get upset by the ESPN people, their talk shows, or this stuff. I got so many options. I'll just flip away, and then when the game is on, I'll just turn on the game.
Yeah.
I don't have to see any of it. I don't have to be bothered by any of it. I don't watch, you know, the draft stuff. But it wasn't the deal this year. But before, I would never watch it because I don't care about Christian Wilkins or Ezekiel Elliott. And that he had the midriff suit. I didn't care about that stuff. I tuned into the draft for the picks, and I would tune away when
there was
stuff I didn't like.
There was a lot of realness in this draft. I mean, even the funny stuff like with CeeDee Lamb or with Isaiah Wilson. But, you know, just seeing people like I've got a friend of mine who is an agent who the player and his family were at his house because they did not have a house where they could, you know, put the home cam and stuff like that. So they came to his. Now, they kept it real quiet, but he and his family came to the agent's house, and they ended up going in a second round. But it was, you know, there was – I got to find out about some of the family stuff that they – you know, it was the difficulties the family has had. I think – now, we'll get to this in a second. And now, Jonathan, we see you. I want to get Jonathan in. As soon as we come back, I want to get Jonathan in. But I want to ask you guys about something. I had a good, long conversation with – you remember Keith Cornelius who yeah. opted for the NFL draft out of Episcopal High School, the funny thing that he did? Well, his dad and I had a long conversation – what? About something that happened with T. Higgins, and it became a big deal on Twitter. And I want to bring that up and see what you guys think after we talk to Jonathan coming up next. It's 7:45 right here on the bench.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Presented by Prime Social. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right. If you guys want to comment on the draft, the Houston Texans picks, I talked about them earlier. I'll reset again. If you guys like, we can talk about some of those picks. Or your favorite team. You got another team where you want to comment on the draft. 55 million people viewed over 3 days. It was a monster record. The ratings were up 37% for day one alone. The NFL raised $100 million up to this point for Draftathon. And, John, just very quickly, what they're doing is there's a huge variety of things that are going to be funded through the $100 million. A lot of them will go directly through the teams, for example. The Minnesota Vikings donated over $5 million, and so theirs goes to certain things. In Philadelphia, for example, theirs will go. It goes to assisting local and also small businesses, you know, in businesses in general to help, you know, to help inject money into businesses. Philadelphia's money is going to go towards 100,000 N95 masks to Thomas Jefferson University, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. They've got 300,000 to the American Red Cross for the plasma program, 6,733 gift cards purchased from Acme. A wide variety. Healthcare Hero Support Group, 35,000 for grieving children, the Uplift Center. And Cincinnati's got 8 different food banks. So this is going to be an extremely wide range of charities or just businesses or whatever the case may be that is funded by this $100 million. So it's not just going to be – the NFL has 5 or 6 major ones, but there's a wide variety of individual city, you know, the donations that come in from cities. From the McNairs, for example, will be Houston-based companies that will be helped with this. So it was a great thing that was done. $100 million. I was kind of blown away by that number that they were able to raise $100 million. But
yeah, I'm just hoping that Rodgers doesn't pocket it. That's all I'm saying.
Let's get Jonathan in. Jonathan wants to talk about the draft. What's up, Jonathan?
Yeah, Lance, this question is for you. I was kind of surprised that the Georgia quarterback went so late. He went in the 5th round to Buffalo. And I was just, my question was, did he not have the physical skills, and but yet he was a little more decorated through his college career than somebody like, you know, that I think it was Utah State, Jordan Love, that quarterback.
Yeah.
And even the quarterback he beat out, Easton. And so I was just kind of questioning that, you know, how much the scouts look at, you know, tangibles, leadership, good personality over physical traits, because he was also part of that Netflix series, QB1.
Yeah.
Check that out. few years ago, him and Tate Martell, and there was a third guy with ended up going to, like, West Virginia or Marshall or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was just kind of – I wanted to get your take on how much scouts look at, like, leadership and how much a guy accomplished in college over his physical traits. And
sure.
I'll just,
that's
I'll
a
hang
great,
up and listen.
That's, yeah, that's a really good question. So to start with, the QB1 – Dell, did you ever watch that? I didn't watch it on Netflix. So I did see – I did see the video of Jake Fromm in high school on QB1 breaking down defenses. This guy, John, is an absolute savant. They say he is brilliant. He lives for hunting, fishing, and football. That's pretty much it in his life. He is brilliant, though, when it comes to coverages, and the way he sees the game is a lot like a coach. I had someone send me somebody who knows Fromm pretty well, who doesn't he this guy doesn't work in the league, but he knows Fromm pretty well, and I thought he had something that is the perfect comment. He said the Buffalo Bills just drafted Josh Allen's quarterback coach, and I think the guy's right. I think they drafted him in the fifth round because he is a backup quarterback, but he's so smart they're going to stick him in the quarterback room with Josh Allen, and now Josh Allen's going to start to see football through clearer eyes because of Jake Fromm.
Now, his completion percentage, he's got a popcorn arm.
That's I mean, it.
He, a pop gun arm.
He's not big.
He can't hit the out. I mean, against LSU, it was so exposed, but it wasn't only against LSU. He just doesn't have
well,
the
but
arm.
He had wide receivers who sucked, too. And let me ask you this. Could he make the throws whenever he was a freshman and sophomore when he had better receivers? Because that's the argument on Jake Fromm.
Yeah, I don't. I still don't know that he's got the arm for.
I don't think so either. I think Jake Fromm is a fourth round guy who is a lifetime backup quarterback who can be a good backup.
Coach. He's gonna be. He's gonna make a really nice coach.
Yeah, I think he's a good backup. He's Kellen Moore. He's right handed Kellen Moore.
Is he more physically gifted than Gardner Minshew?
Gardner's got a better arm.
Okay.
Yeah,
they're about the same body types. Gardner's very very smart, 1 year guy basically. Jake Fromm. Now, Jake Fromm has played in high-leverage games. He didn't look like he had a care in the world when he played Alabama. Looked good. I think – I don't know what happened this year.
Because I remember – you go back to that game and their run to that game. I mean, he wasn't the most physically gifted, but his arm didn't seem like a detriment
in
his career.
I'm wondering if maybe we're selling him short. When I watched him during the summer, I thought he was a potential second-rounder is what I thought. I thought he was, and then after the season was over, I moved him to the fourth. He didn't have his wide receivers. He had Lawrence Cager, who came over from and I thought Lawrence Cager played well coming over from Miami, but he's not a fast separating guy. Now, Fromm did not play well this year. He did not make good throws. And like John said, he has a popcorn arm. There are certain throws that he really cannot make.
It's pop gun arm.
Yeah. You should know. You watch Joe Burrow.
I can't.
I get what everyone's saying, but I just remember early in his career that, yeah, I didn't think he was most physically gifted. Jacob Eason was obviously the prototype that he replaced, but I don't remember him being a guy who, well, that ball died on its way there. I don't know
what
happened.
It did, though. But it did, though.
I'm talking.
Yeah, but, whatever, you didn't see it.
Maybe he had a shoulder. I don't know. But if I was him, I would have put it out there. I had a shoulder this year or whatever.
I'm telling you right now. But his Burrow arm did it not, too.
He was. You know what? Kellen Moore is a great.
That's who it
and
is.
And for whatever reason, Georgia. Aaron Murray started forever at Georgia and nothing.
That's who Aaron. It's all those quarter. Eric Zier, Aaron Murray. Yeah. But who did he chase out, though? This is worth mentioning. Josh Fields couldn't beat him out. Had to go. Justin Fields. You've got Jacob Eason.
The physically gifted guys, you got to go. Talking about Georgia quarterbacks, Zach Mettenberger couldn't play there. He got in trouble. Had to go to LSU to play. But all these – I don't know what it is about Georgia quarterbacks. They play either under Mark Richt or Kirby Smart. They play a long time, but they're not NFL guys.
I tell you, you know what it is? This is really interesting because if you had – Burrow made – reads and he made throws down the field with unbelievable deep ball accuracy, but just the pure outs outside the numbers and stuff like that, there's not a lot of difference between Joe's throws in 2018 and Jake Fromm's in 2019. Those throws look very, very similar. The difference is that Joe Brady said, okay, we're going to do different things offensively that put Joe in line to succeed, and we're going to create opportunities for him to make reads of safeties and corners where we're going to simplify some things through our route combinations. And Joe is just great at, you know, the other difference is the poise of Joe Burrow, the ability to throw at the accuracy on the move. There's a lot more than just the system.
Joe threw better outs than Fromm. Let's not put him on Fromm's
outs. No, it was very similar. I'll tell you what we'll do. I'm going to send you.
Every throw.
That's fine. I'm going to send you 18 throws.
Fromm was embarrassing in the SEC.
I'm going to send you 18 throws, and I'll just send you in a get a Dropbox account. I'm going to send you a bunch of plays, and you can look at them. Okay. I'm going to send you the Dropbox because the tape don't lie. And Jake Fromm is not a slap. It was just not a slappy necessarily. He made throws that were solid throws, but he had a minus arm. Joe Burrow had a minus arm in 18. That what Dell's saying is accurate. I mean, they're not the same quarterback. Joe Burrow does things that's really – his arm is not – there is no argument for Joe Burrow with this great arm. I don't know where that comes from. His stuff is poise,
no one
patience.
Said he's got a great arm, but don't – I wouldn't put – well – again,
he has a minus.
Well, let's show me 2,000. Okay, I'm not agreeing with that. But however, in 2019, he showed he can throw out. So I mean, I don't think there's no question.
I'll show him, dude. He had a below 50% completion percentage. Joe Burrow did, and he threw 70%. That throw was below 50%.
And how many of it was tight coverage? How many of it was drop balls? How many of it was bad
tight,
routes?
Yes, it's how tight many, coverage, I mean, like you are, see in the NFL.
Those are obviously factors.
I looked at all 43 throws. I'll send all 43 to you.
All right.
And you can take a look at them. And the ball dies. The nose of the ball dives on Joe Burrow. It's true. It's that you don't have guys make throws a lot. Steve Ensminger had him make it a lot. It was stupid in 18 and 19. You got to be smart, but it's irrelevant. Joe Burrow has way more talent than, to me, the total package in Jake Fromm. And yes, the physical traits do hurt Jake Fromm. You've got to have at least a functional arm, and Joe Burrow has a functional arm. Jake Fromm, frankly, I don't think he has a functional arm. But to Dell's point, it wasn't an issue when he's doing up Alabama for two straight years. I mean, Jake Fromm, I don't know what happened to Jake Fromm. Why it fell off the map this year. No idea.
All right. When we come back, 759 ESPN 97.5. Some undrafted. Let's take a look at Texans undrafted free agents and see what you think. Any guys that you might have written
up? Two of them I like a lot.
Okay. We'll do that on the other side right here. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.